And we're back. After Dark Patreon. Mwah. Thank you so much. We've got Sam Bunce joining us. We're talking Gurdjieff. Brad, thank you for getting Sam on the pod. Always fun
yeah,
to meet new people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Sam is, you know, we're in a part of Twitter. I don't know what the boundaries of it are exactly. Yeah, I don't really understand it, but I'm sure we've got a lot. Sam and I have a lot of mutuals, Kevin. I'm sure you guys have, you know, a lot of the same people. So it's cool to meet people. This is one of the things before we get into it. A lot of people hate on Twitter, and my firm conviction is that they're not using it correctly.
Yeah.
If you hate it, if you hate the experience, you don't know what you're doing on that app, because it is fun. Now, you could say it's rotting my brain. I shouldn't be on there so much, but it is fun as hell. And it's really cool to meet people face to face, as it were, who you've known on Twitter for a while. So this is
and
fun.
Sam, you're cracking the seal on 2023. We've put that rotten year 2022 is
just, yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
Oh boy. That was a rough one.
It was kind of rough. Yeah.
Don't you think, I mean, part of the appeal of Gurdjieff's system, and of course we were the fourth way, and we're going to get into the sex business for After Dark, and we'll read a few more of the exercises and things, but the appeal of his system is that it promises to teach the average person how to have a meaningfully spiritual experience in life while not leaving the world. Mm. So in a way, it's for the laity.
Mm. Yeah,
we can't all be priests or nuns or Sufis
He talked about how there were like three different paths that what do you call them, the way of the fakir, the way of the
hey this is a family show. Yeah, the way of the fakir,
the way of the monk and the way of the yogi. Mm-hmm. And those all align with the like three different parts of the being, like the three centers. Like the fakir did develop like consciousness through physical practices. The monk was emotional and devotional, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the yogi, that was like a more I guess like more like jnana yoga would be the term for it, like mm-hmm. a yoga of the mind. And then, but then the fourth way, which is what he called his own study, that was, or his own practices. Yeah. That was the, supposed to be easier to follow in our time than the other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there's gotta be some way to have a meaningful spiritual experience without totally dropping out, right? Without sitting under the Bodhi tree and starving to death or whatever, you know?
And he's really trying to give modern man back, I think, something that he and I think many others would argue kind of was taken from us. E.J. Gold even kind of mentions it, where he talks about prayer absolute was just an assumed part of your human inheritance. So they didn't bother to write it down. Of course, we were communing with the absolute through all sorts of methods. It's just part of being human. And somewhere along the way, that we got separated from that. You know, I didn't mention it on the main episode, but it reminded me of Junger.
Yeah.
This idea of stereoscopic vision, which we talk about in the Ernst Jünger episode, this idea that you see the symbolic and the real or the material at the same time. And so for Gurdjieff, that's more about kind of like the inner world and the outer world meeting in a harmonious way. It also reminds me of Artaud. Mm-hmm. I was reminded when you talk about objective art, I think that's what Artaud was pushing to accomplish and why he was so influenced and so admired the influenced by and then also so admired the Balinese theater, because mm-hmm. these gestures stood for objective things that the audience through a lifetime of training understood what this flare of the hand or whatever it is means. And it's purely symbolic and not linguistic, not just
I think people often make the mistake of assuming that language, spoken or written language, is objective, and the sciences and things try to make it so, but it's really not.
You know,
we all have subtly different definitions for basically every word And so we do our best comparing our dictionaries to each other as we speak, but there's always layers of interpretation. So yeah,
people are not ready for what I'm dropping this year. The fifth way.
Yeah.
The way of the podcaster.
Oh no. I don't think that's good. I don't think that's a good one.
Blow everything out of the water and just talk ourselves silly.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. Sam, are there any other really, before I dig into the topics I teased, you mentioned you maybe have something about Gurdjieff and Eros or sex. Did you have something to share on that front?
Yeah, well, I was trying to find, there's like this little introduction to the Gurdjieff work I have by that guy I mentioned, Jacob Needleman. And this was written for like the main organization that like perpetuates his teachings, the one based in, I guess, still in Paris, that like her chief student, Madame de Saltzman, was the head of that.
Yeah.
And now it's her son, Michel de Saltzman.
Madame de Saltzman was the only person that Gurdjieff said was not an idiot.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's cool. Including himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Needleman addressed the question of Gurdjieff and sex in this very briefly, probably for people who might be concerned about that aspect of it. And he said, well, you know, he was a conductor of powerful energies. I couldn't find that exact passage.
No worries. I've got some other stuff. But yes, he was a conductor of powerful energies. Yeah. You could see, I mean, and everybody, one of the fun things once you get into Gurdjieff and Gurdjieff lore and reading about him is everyone has a remembrance of meeting him. And he had this uncanny ability, bit of a con guy, bit of a cult guy, bit of a flim-flammy guy, but with so much substance underneath it that you can't dismiss him out of hand the way that you maybe could some of these other folks. I mean, let's just accept what he was, though. I mean, he was definitely a cultic figure. And people, when they would meet him, they would always have a different story about how he treated different people when he first met them. There's a famous Crowley story about the hospitality and then kind of almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've told that story a number of times on the pod, but and what a figure to inspire that in people. He must have had something. And it was always the eyes and his gaze and his poise and his kind of animal magnetism came over in such a powerful way that people kind of, and then of course it becomes a self-perpetuating myth, oh, you're gonna meet Gurdjieff, what's he gonna be like, you know? So
right,
very very fascinating, charming and charismatic. I already put the laser eyes on him, so we're nice. We're in excellent. Good shape. Let me grab some of the lit I have here. And this is from selfdefinition.org. And the URL is very funny. Doesn't even say it anywhere here. It just says the URL is literally Gurdjieff-on-the-abuse-and-use-of-sex.
Okay.
.htm.
Yeah,
another old website. Yeah, people again, Gurdjieff, and it's probably the Californians who got online very early and were really into Gurdjieff that put all this content out there. But let me read a little bit and we'll talk about it. And this is from This is from In Search of the Miraculous, and this is from Chapter 3. On the first occasion, he spoke of three centers, the intellectual, the emotional, and the moving, and tried to make us distinguish these functions, find examples, and so on. Afterwards, the instinctive center was added as an independent and self-supporting machine. Afterwards, the sex center. I remember that some of his remarks arrested my attention. For instance, when speaking of the sex center, he said it practically never worked independently because it was always dependent on other centers, the intellectual, the emotional, the instinctive, and the moving. Then in speaking of the energy of centers, he often returned to what he called wrong work of centers and to the role of the sex center in the work. He spoke a great deal about how all centers rob the sex center of its energy and produce with this energy quite wrong work full of useless excitement and, in return, give to the sex center useless energy with which it was unable to work. I remember his words. It is a very big thing when the sex center works with its own energy, but it happens very seldom. And then I want to read another couple of paras here. And this is from chapter 12. Sex plays a tremendous role in maintaining the mechanicalness of life. Everything that people do is connected with sex, politics, religion, art, the theater. Oh, well, not the theater. Music is all sex. Do you think people go to the theater or to church to pray or to see some new play? That is only for the sake of appearances. The principal thing in the theater as well as in church is that there will be a lot of women or a lot of men. This is the center of gravity of all gatherings. What do you think brings people to cafes, to restaurants, to various fetes? One thing only, sex. It is the principal motive force of all mechanicalness, all sleep, all hypnosis depends on it.
Hmm.
OnlyFans.
Okay.
But let's signal boost that. Let's keep everybody in this somnambulistic, dazed state. There's something to that, isn't there?
Simmering at it. Yeah. Interesting. Wow. And then, Okay.
What does that provoke in you, Sam? Are you on board with that?
Oh, yeah. I think that sounds totally true. And you can definitely, as true as it's always been, for sure. It definitely seems like it's accelerated. Yeah, like you were saying with OnlyFans or with Pornhub and all that kind of stuff in our own time, the ability to be completely led by sex, seems obvious.
Yeah, well, and often it's not really sex though, is it?
Yeah.
And people are procreating in many cases less and less. It's it's this fruitless in real material terms. And even the bonds that sex creates seem thinner and thinner and it's less meaningful and it's more transactional.
Yeah. And looking for all these different ways to arrange things, like, so the whole polygamy movement and all of that too, which is sort of
this polyamory.
Polyamory, right? Sort of
how hilarious is it that it's the PC thing to say is polyamory,
right?
Whoa, that slope,
right? Yeah, right,
it happened real fast, didn't it?
Yeah, well,
I wonder too if when he says that the sex center rarely works independently, if the way it gets connected to status, with pickup artist culture and having a high number of sexual conquests or all these other things, it's meeting other emotional and mental needs that don't necessarily relate to the purely sexual part.
Wow. And that's such an interesting insight and follows so closely on our recent watch of Eyes Wide Shut, where Dr. Bill ends up. I don't know if you listened to that episode or not, but that's what Eyes Wide Shut is about. It's about the good doctor Bill compensating for a status embarrassment and then a sexual embarrassment by his wife.
And this compensatory anxiety comes in, and that's what gets him into all of his trouble, right? That's what leads him sort of clearly in the wrong direction. It makes me wonder, though. I was very interested when you added the, Kevin, when you were reading that bit where he adds the instinctive to the third one. That then starts to line up actually with Carl Gustav Jung and some interpretations of the tarot. And then the sex to come on, I have to say, I'm still kind of intellectually struggling with, okay, the sex is then this fifth one, because to me, the way that I would think of it is it's something that actually sort of pierces down through all four layers in a certain way. There's a movement component, there's an emotional component, there's an instinctive component, and there's an emotional. Did I already say emotional? It's something that properly practiced or whatever is sort of holistically wrapping these all together. And so I'm trying to get my head around it being actually this somewhat distinct fifth one. And maybe I can't, because of what Gurdjieff is saying, right? He's seeing it decoupled in some way. And it's such a, because I live in the modern era, I can't do that for some reason. I don't know. It's interesting.
What if I read on a little bit?
Yeah, give me a little more.
Gurdjieff speaking. You must try to understand what I mean. Mechanicalness is especially dangerous when people try to explain it by something else and not by what it really is. When sex is clearly conscious of itself and does not cover itself up by anything else, it is not the mechanicalness about which I am speaking. On the contrary, sex which exists by itself and is not dependent on anything else is already a great achievement. Well, you know what they say, practice makes perfect, right? But the evil lies in this constant self-deception. Yeah. What then is the deduction? Should it be so or should it be changed? Asked someone. Gurdjieff smiled. That is always something people ask. Whatever they may be speaking about, they ask, ought it be like that and how can it be changed? That is, what ought to be done in such a case? As though it were possible to change anything, as though it were possible to do anything. You at least ought to have realized by now how naive such questions are. Cosmic forces have created this state of affairs, and cosmic forces control this state of affairs. And you ask, can it be left like that or should it be changed? God himself could change nothing. Do you remember what was said about the 48 laws? They cannot be changed, but liberation from a considerable portion of them is possible. That is to say, there is a possibility of changing the state of affairs for oneself. It is possible to escape from the general law. You should understand that in this case, as well as in all others, the general law cannot be changed, but one can change one's own position in relation to this law. One can escape from the general law. The more so since in this law about which I speak, that is, in the power of sex over people, are included many different possibilities. It includes the chief form of slavery, and it is also the chief possibility of liberation. This is what you must understand. New birth, of which we have spoken before, depends as much upon sex energy as do physical birth and the propagation of the species. So now, you have to master this in order to create this body that he was talking about, right? this kind of soul that you could grow on top of the germ that was given to you by the creator, I think, is how I understand.
Okay.
Does that square with your understanding, Sam?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah. So is this a knowing Gurdjieff's history and his many children, is this a Gurdjieff pickup line in some way? Like, does he, you know what I'm saying? A woman's like, I've got some questions about this. And he says, listen. And he gives that. And he says, would you like me to come show you how that works? I mean.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's not true.
Right? I think at this point, anybody in his orbit was already so enmeshed in the cultic vibe that I don't think he needed to even probably pick any. Do you know, I think at this point he was such a center of power and so charismatic and authoritative. Dude was a cult leader. I mean, let's be realistic. This is a cultish kind of a thing. I mean, I sometimes think that, like, you have no choice but to align yourself with some sort of you could do worse than Gurdjieff. There's some real kernels of insight.
Oh, absolutely. Here. Yeah. And I'm not saying that to kind of dismiss the whole thing. I'm just thinking about pairing what he's saying with sort of his history, right?
I'd love to be a fly on the wall on one of these evenings where he, like, paired off with one of the students. Like, what was that vibe like?
I really wonder
what it was like, you know, because I don't imagine, like, leaning on the side, you know. Tell me about yourself. Like, I can't.
I just stared at you, probably.
So your sister, she's really quite difficult. Is that what you're telling me? You know better.
Yeah. There was a story about how, and this kind of fit with, who was it, Ouspensky, or who was it who you mentioned? He first met Gurdjieff at, like, a cafe with lots of prostitutes.
That was the Hartman.
Okay, yeah. There was this, like, proper lady who Gurdjieff tried to disconcert. I think this was in Paris when he met her, by, like, taking her. Like, you know, she was interested in his system and everything. And he took her to, like, a strip club, basically. So he brought this like proper lady to like a strip club,
right? Something. Trying to tread on her corns, I believe was the phrase, right? Trying to kind of disrupt her and make her, you know,
take people out of their element so they could act more authentically. That's the official justification for it, I guess.
And also trying to level out your centers. If you would show up with a PhD or whatever it is, you were a doctor of philosophy, and you wanted to interrogate him about his ideas, he would make you dig a ditch for a week and then fill the ditch in before he would talk to you.
Right.
In some cases, stories like that, which are so fun.
He would, he also talked about the difference between like the essence of a person, which was, I guess, maybe the same as that embryo of the soul. It was like the kernel of reality. But then there was like the persona, which was like the socially created part of a person that had no inner reality. But it, and so like to try to break through the persona and get to the essence. And he
I don't see how this fella's ideas are any less salient than Jung or Freud.
Just I was just gonna say that's
not a fashionable
thing.
He was very eccentric. And I mean, I even love just this is the Institute for the Harmonious Development of Man. What does that mean? What am I signing up for here? But they flock to him and serious people as well.
Well, he was a serious, I mean, this is the thing. This is what was so fascinating about us covering his biography in depth as a subject, is because there is like, there's the flim-flam element. There's the cult leader-ish element. There's, but then ultimately you start boiling it down and it's like, yeah, this stuff is basically true. Like if you did this stuff, your life would be feel more meaningful, I think. It seems.
And you know who was riffing on this trip was Timmy Leary. Timmy Leary and his friends start taking shrooms, start taking acid, and in no time they were in some rich person's mansion in upstate New York City, living out a similar trip to this, just with the help of LSD. I'm sure they were familiar with Gurdjieff.
Yeah,
let me look it up.
Yeah, I can't imagine they wouldn't have. Somebody in their circle would have been, at least, if not if Tim Leary himself hadn't read that stuff.
Those guys
were no fools. I mean, you know, they may have
all of this stuff went on and influenced the Beatles. Is Gurdjieff on Sergeant Pepper?
No, I don't.
On the cover?
I don't think so. I don't think
no.
So.
Crowley is. Yeah, but they left. It feels like Gurdjieff should have been on there. Crowley's enough.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we have fun. Well, so tell me, as we wind down the After Dark, Sam, you mentioned you're writing another book of short stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's in progress. Like, I think it's more than halfway done, probably more like 2/3 of the way. Excellent. No, maybe more than that. But yeah, I can't, I haven't made any like final selections on what's going to be in it and what's going to not be in it, you know?
Yeah.
But there's
go ahead.
There's some that I think are pretty good. There's one I put on, my blog already, The Cracks in the Wall. I think that'll be in the collection.
A good one. I didn't quite finish it. I was reading it like as we were leading up to this, and it's good. So you should. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Nice work.
What's it about? Do you care to say?
Yeah. Well, The Cracks in the Wall is, it's about, well, kind of the, I'll just give the like main kind of kernel of a concept behind it. I was thinking about a house that's haunted, not because it has a history, but because it has no history. It's like an ultra modern haunted house that is so like sort of creepily sterile that it, well, it's kind of like explained in the story what how it gets haunted and why it's it becomes a scary place.
Right. I dig that. I've been in those kinds of places. It's you go into something's brand new. It's like I don't even know. Like,
I find the more like classic haunted house to be kind of cozy. You know, like a old scary Victorian house does like a cozy vibe to me, but like a house that's like I was thinking of specifically a real house I was in once where it was like all, I don't know, it was like a mansion, but it was all like cinder blocks and stuff,
right?
You know?
Like, right. It
was like a kitchen that was just like all concrete, you know, and kind of like the weird vibes of
You see these kinds of places sometimes in TikTok or something. Like, I'm not on TikTok, but like that filters through onto Twitter, and it's sort of like people are showing you around their $10 million house, and it just feels impossible to live inside of it, right? It's just like, it just
I feel like almost all celebrities, and especially the like TikTok influencer people, they live in this like California mansion where it's just all white. It's just like all white surfaces. Maybe there's some abstract art or something on a wall, but aside from that, just
but it was picked because it matches the color of something, right? It's not like they're like No, I've noticed that.
It doesn't have personality, you know.
Right. You know what this reminds me of is how uncanny and uncomfortable the apartment is in Lost Highway that they live in. That apartment feels so haunted just by the way it's laid out. It just doesn't feel that. You may want to remedy that. That is a very haunted movie. Are you a Lynch stan? Or are you Lost Highway's intense.
I've only really seen like Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, Eraserhead, but not the other ones. You know, it's kind of hard to find Inland Empire and
they're not like readily available
You've seen the Elephant Man though.
No, I have not.
That one beautiful. Well, you got some Lynch to get into. Awesome. Well, Sam, we've kept you a long time for A Dark Room, so thank you so much. It was really nice to wrap Gurdjieff with you. Just really
a pleasure.
Yeah, a real pleasure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I love talking about this stuff. So anytime, honestly.
Good.
Yeah, good.
So hopefully, if you guys ever want to come on the Bunchcast, you know, you got an open invitation here. So
absolutely. Yeah, we'll go on anything.
Almost, anytime. So. Practically almost anything, Brad. Come on, remember boundaries.
Yeah.
We don't
sacred
love, heptapar parshanak. We're gonna I said I was gonna read a few more exercises. So
let's bolt this off.
I'm gonna read us through number 12. So I'm gonna read the ones that I haven't read yet. Let's see. So formulation of the ideas. Okay. The attempt to understand the ideas. The attempt to relate the ideas and understand the relationships. The attempt to define terms in accordance with institute ideas. Of course, that's his own institute. The attempt to interpret, The attempt to interpret life, human beings, etc., in terms of mechanicality, types, springs, centers, etc. Describe experience, reflect on the ideas.
Okay.
It sounds like you've got a long row to hoe with Gurdjieff. You're not there on a holiday. You're there to work with a capital W.
One of those things sounds easy but is super difficult when you really do it right.
Absolutely, but it's super easy to support the pod through Patreon. We really appreciate it. Love you guys. Thanks again for coming on, and we will see you down the road. We got some good stuff coming up. Conrad, Brad is deep in show prep. Get in the Telegram if you're not in there, t.me/artofdarkpod. You know where to find us. I'm getting ready to do Victor Groon, and then we just got a banging year coming, the live show. You're just down the road, Sam, in Chicago. Art of Darkness Live.
Yeah, I've been meaning to check out Minneapolis. So
there you go.
If you come up for that, you'll have friends up here. You're more than welcome to come to the live show. It's going to be at this great old brewery in St. Paul. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right.
That sounds cool.
Think about it, Sam. All right.
Peace. All right. Good. Good night, guys.
Take care.
Thanks so much.